listener, and welcome to another edition of Show Me State of Mind, our podcast, our little small but mighty podcast that's going to try to capture a lot of the fun stories and the people involved in the mental health movement here in Missouri over the past 15 years or so. And we really enjoy these and hope you do too. So again, welcome to another Show Me State of Mind. All right. So again, listeners, welcome. It is a great day today. I am super excited about our podcast today. We have a real legend of the Missouri behavioral health world with us, someone who has worked at the highest levels of DMH and at the highest levels of our state community provider system as a director of SWOPE CCBHC and former chair of the MBHC board of directors. With me today is the one and only, the legend himself, Mark Miller. And Mark, welcome to the podcast, my friend. I am so excited to spend some time with you today.
Well, thank you so much, Brent. And you made me think about the man, the myth, the legend. I think it's more the myth than the legend, but it's
Oh, man.
definitely a pleasure to join you today.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun time, Mark. You're such a good friend and mentor to me over the years. But let's get into some of the stuff here. But as we go, we're going to have a lot of fun and talk about a lot of things. But let's dig in a little bit to your career. And we talked a little bit before we came fully on air about a real interesting start to your career with the state, which I kind of, for some reason, knew about the stuff with mental health, but didn't know that's not exactly where you started your state career. So give us a little bit of Mark Miller, how you started with the state of Missouri.
Okay, so actually started with the Missouri Department of Economic Development. And of course, my educational background from the University of Missouri was in community development. So my first
Okay.
job was with Department of Economic Development in community development, and spent about 3 years doing that. And we were talking a little bit before we came on the air about how I got over to the Office of Administration, which then leads how I get to the Department of Mental Health.
Yeah.
And so the story we were talking about is when I was working at Economic Development, at the time I was the only African American who was on the staff. And as minority businesses wrote in and wanted questions answered and that sort of thing, they kept giving them to me. But I didn't work in that part of economic development. I worked in the community development block grants part. So I thought, well, let me write something and give it to the director of the Department of Economic Development at the time. And maybe, they'll look into creating something for all these
Yeah.
people who had interest. And so, you give things to folks and you don't hear back. And so a long time went past, and I think it's over a year. And he came back to me and said, "There's an opportunity in the Office of Administration." And I was thinking, well, what? And so he showed it to me. But it was a copy of my own handwritten manuscript that was what I had given them to say, "Here's all these folks who are desiring to get some assistance in business development." And of course, I said, "Well, I'll apply for it."
Yeah.
And did apply for it. And of course, I kind of probably knew a little bit more about it than anybody else who applied since I had written it. And a good friend of ours who we were talking about, Jim Moody, hired me. And that's how I moved to the Office of Administration. Well, I spent
That's
several
amazing.
years there at the Office of Administration, working with design and construction, working with the other
Yeah.
state agencies, and helping identify minority firms that could do business with the state.
Oh man, I love
There
it. That's
came an
so cool.
opportunity with Keith Schaefer to do almost exactly the same thing, but it was for the Department of Mental Health,
Yeah.
trying to identify new vendors who could provide substance use disorder services, who could provide enhanced residential services, those sorts of things. And they needed somebody who could go out into the community and who could concentrate their efforts on that.
Yeah.
And so that's what Keith was looking for to join his team, which
I'll
would
be
be
darned.
part of the senior leadership team
Yeah.
for the Department of Mental Health. And so
that's amazing, Mark. So that ties so many things together for me. That thread you just talked about, and we'll get back to you because you kept going. You did many other things with the state, but so I was, it's funny because I was in the municipal government back in around 92, 93. And we're not going to try to date ourselves here.
Yeah, but you,
I worked on a,
I'm afraid.
I worked on a really large community development block grant project to build a big new water reservoir up in North Missouri. And so very familiar with the CDBG program and your work in that area. And then when you flip over to work with Jim Moody, a mutual friend of ours who unfortunately just passed away recently. And I want to give a shout to our mutual friend. He was a wonderful mentor and a great guy. And
absolutely great guy.
And at that time, that would have been, would that have been which administration was that? Were you high? Was he back under Ashcroft then? Or was
I was thinking it was toward the tail end of Ashcroft.
Yeah, right.
That's
toward
what
the
I'm
end
thinking.
before Carnahan came in.
Probably. Yes. Yeah. I'm thinking it was in that period.
Yeah, but I think that in that interesting, like I think that's important that all of us understand that even in this kind of time, and we'll get to it maybe a little bit more later, of some negative things happening around words that we have accepted long ago as positives, that this came out of a real kind of bipartisan era, not completely bipartisan, obviously some, but united around finding business opportunity or economic drivers of success for populations that maybe had been overlooked in the past. And what an amazing story that happened in the Ashcroft administration. But then how you got that with that manuscript that I heard a speaker say something about just, you know, how important it is to kind of make your own stuff, take those risks, do that. So that was a bit of initiative on your part to draft up that manuscript in the first place.
Yeah.
But then
Yeah.
to have it come back to you a year later, just that's amazing.
Yeah,
and
it
then
is.
Keith Schaefer 1.0, that was Keith's first run at
yeah, that was Keith's first time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keith swears to this day, and I haven't had him on the pod yet, and I hope to. He swears that he got the job because he was his first time at mental health because someone mistook him for another Keith Schaefer. He says that he got called to the interview because it was a pure mistake and then somehow did get it. But I don't know if that's true or not. But
Well, when we get to the point when I talk about getting to Fulton State Hospital, I'm going to give you a similar story.
Perfect, perfect. Well, let's get back going. You end up then working
I end up
senior
on the
management there at DMH.
Yeah, so that's how I got into the senior leadership part of DMH and continued to do so for many years there. And, you know, got a chance to work with Jackie White, who eventually became the commissioner of the Office of Administration, Michael Kuti, who was over the substance abuse, and it was called ADA then, alcohol and drug.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it also gave me a chance to continue my career in working with the legislature and really becoming more familiar with the workings of how state government actually operated, because OA, of course, had given me this broad lens of what was going on and being in hearings and all of those sorts of things. And now I was beginning to hone my skills because now I'm in a department who is presenting budgets and all of that sort of thing, which gave me an entirely different vantage point to watch from, which I know you eventually came over and did exactly the same, that you created those budgets that were being presented.
Right.
Those sorts of opportunities, when you have them in your career, you really want to take advantage of and learn as much as you possibly can, because you don't know when it's going to come back and serve you again at some other point. And when I came over to Swope, absolutely it served me from that vantage point because I understood what you were trying to accomplish. And we could work in concert because I understood the process, where a lot of folks, they've never seen the process. And so they didn't understand how the workings and the levers worked and how you can work together in order to create an outcome. So
yeah, it, absolutely.
It was wonderful. And that's how I got over to the Department of Mental Health.
Oh, wow. What a story. I love that. And the Capitol is its own beast in the way the money flows. And knowing that, it does give you a big advantage in planning. Because if I'm an agency, you know, you kind of, it can be frustrating because the process is the process. And, you know, we get a lot, you know, where are the talking points? We want to start talking to legislators. Well, we don't have those till the GovRec. And then once you get done with the legislature, you got to at least start planning. But then there's that pesky veto time, and you just so much that goes into it. And then once June 28th or whatever, they sign the budget, then they want you to implement it in 2 days. So you kind of got to understand that flow of things and be patient with it. And that's tough to explain to leadership and board sometimes, I bet. But it's just kind of part of my natural life cycle, I think, at this point. I've been doing it so long. Yeah, but you understood it well, which you're right. I bet it did serve you well.
Yeah. And you know, most of the boards and organizations, they're on the regular calendar year. And it's hard for them to translate that into a state fiscal year.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things that I came with, because I'd been working under the state fiscal year. So when I got to Swope, my thinking was already on state fiscal year, and I had to learn the calendar year a little bit. But the two have to merge in order for the organizations to be successful.
That's right. Because you got to, if you wait too long, you get behind. I mean, it starts, sometimes you got to get ramped up in order to be ready, which, you know, that helps to understand those cycles and the fiscal side of things. Because, to bring up a program, goodness sakes, it just takes a lot of, you got to get through the administrative side of it, and then the people are waiting on the money side, but you got to ramp up before the money gets there. And you got just, so it is important to understand all of that. So that,
it is.
So, so true. But then, so tell me then, you keep moving. So then you get into some facility work.
Yeah. So after being there a few years, when Roy Wilson, who good friend of mine, psychiatrist, was the department director, we started having conversations about where could I move in the organization? And he said, you know, I think if you really want to get deeper into the organization, then understanding how facilities work and actually running a facility would be the way to go. And so now, we didn't play golf, but Roy Wilson and I rode bikes on the Katy Trail. And for folks who are familiar with Jeff City, the Katy Trail is a very common place where people go riding bikes and that sort of thing. Now, Roy's about 6'4" or something like that.
He's a tall, lean guy, as I remember Dr. Wilson.
Yeah. And I'm 5'10" and not nearly as lean. Let me put it like that.
Yeah, Mark and I share a similar body type versus Dr. Wilson.
So we would go riding, and Brent, Roy would just leave me in the dust. He's taking off and I'm pumping the beat the band, trying to keep up with him. So we couldn't have much of a conversation because I was out of breath by the time I came.
That's
up.
A great story. So you rode bikes together in air quotes, but not really.
but not really. But that was sort of.
Hey, Mark, to this day, I really think he just had a better bike. That's all it was.
I'll
he just spent more on a bike. He just had a better gear ratios or something like that.
So once we decided that that was going to be something I was going to do, then he went about to, okay, how do I make it happen? And I wanted to stay in Central Missouri because, you know, I got a home and that sort of thing, kids in school. And so we decided that Fulton State Hospital was going to be my training ground. And now here's the part that's similar to the story Keith said. So at the time, they were changing superintendents at Fulton State Hospital. You remember back in those days, they called them some hospital superintendents.
Yeah, and they had power then. Not
Yeah,
that they don't
they
now, but
did.
they kind of ran their fiefdoms back in the day.
So the new superintendent, who was Felix Vincennes from St. Louis, and I both showed up the same day. And here's the similarity. They didn't know who Felix was, and they didn't know who I was, so they didn't know who the hospital superintendent was.
Oh my goodness.
And so
Unreal.
when we got there, they were sincere. They were like, are you Felix? No, I'm not Felix. I'm Mark. And Felix and I had the greatest time with that, laughing about, well, they don't even know which one of us is the hospital
Yeah,
superintendent. And
that
that was
could
the
have been
beginning of my facilities career.
you. Okay, got it, got it. And then
Yeah.
ultimately, though, from Fulton State Hospital, you continued to move, ultimately got over to Kansas City, right?
Yes, yeah, and Kansas City was home. At the end of my career, came over and actually became the hospital, I think it was COO. It had changed from superintendent to chief operating officer at
Okay.
that point, and became the chief operating officer of what at one time was Western Missouri Mental Health Center, but had just morphed into the Center for Behavioral Medicine, and a new building had been erected, and the old building was being torn down in order to make way on the 22nd Street corridor, which has now been completely kind of consumed by things with Children's Mercy and with Truman Medical Center.
Okay.
And so that's where the old Western Missouri was,
Yeah.
and finished my career there. And that's how I got to SWOC.
Yeah. So
Yeah.
how remind people though, and back in even when you went to Fulton, for anyone who's not visited a very large state hospital, and certainly Western was a very large hospital at one point, and Fulton is still is today. But these were, these are large facilities with a lot of staff and a lot of operations behind them. We're not talking maybe back at the zenith with the farms and the dairy operations and the bakeries and this, but they still have a lot of staff and work to do. Really quite remarkable. If you're running a facility like that, it's a lot of juggling a lot of things.
Yeah, I think Fulton at the time when I was there had over 1,000 employees. And for those who may not know, Fulton is the state's maximum security psychiatric facility. And going in is just an adventure in and of itself. You have to go through this double sallyport where the gate has to close behind you before the gate in front of you will open to allow you onto the campus. And I think it's still that way today, even with the new Fulton State Hospital. That still has to happen. And hundreds of clients living there. And some of those people who had, the most challenging behaviors that one could imagine. And the staff truly dedicated and working with them. I mean, you go through vocational rehabilitation sort of training, you go through behavioral modification training. There are lots of psychiatrists, lots of psychologists. Of course, a lot of direct care staff. You're still, even though they didn't have the dairy farms and that sort of thing, you're still feeding 500 and 600 and 700 people 3 times a day. You're housing them. All the things that it takes to run something like that is tremendous. It really does. It's got its own power plant. It has an
It's
infrastructure that is something to behold. And especially when you get into the point of where you're trying to operationalize things and work on things. I remember that each morning we had staff meeting around 8 o'clock. and we would go over the entire evening of what happened since we left work the previous day. And so that gives you a sense of the scope of what it is that you do, but it also is fairly humbling because you really see some of the folks who are struggling and they're trying to make it. And some of them never can leave Fulton because of the things that they had done on the outside. And kind of funny story about one guy there one day. So I'm walking on the units one day. And he said something that really made sense to me and gave me an aha moment. He said, "I've been through all these levels of training three or four different times." And I won't say he's the age I am now, but he was getting up there a little bit. And he said, "Am I ever going to get a chance to retire?" And I had to think about that. I said, "Why? You've been here, you're not going to leave, but you've done everything, you've been through all the courses and all of that sort of thing." And I hadn't thought about that. And it still, as you can see, it still sticks with me that yeah, there needs to be changes in how we provide treatment for people that also go along with where they are in their life's journey. And I learned that from that client.
That's good. That it really is important that we, as we age, and I know Department of Corrections, other institutions all deal with that, is how do you provide that appropriate level of care depending on where in life you're at, and not just try to force it right into something that just doesn't make sense. And yeah, that's fascinating. Well, that's cool. So you did get back home to Kansas City. And so just for the listener, that's a pretty amazing story of the different people you worked with, the different leaders you worked with, and kind of on your state side, I know you worked on a lot of different things. Is there anything, Mark, in particular? You highlighted a few, but anything that just sticks with you that you're like, you know what, I'm really proud to have worked with them on this issue, or I'm really proud of this piece of work I did. It's hard to identify one sometimes, but anything for the listener that you really hold on to?
So the one that I'm most proud of, we worked on together. But I think one of the things at the state that I was very proud of was working with the consumer net. And it really gave me a much greater sense of how the Department of Mental Health worked with consumers and families. And for a period of time, I was the liaison to the consumer network. And so we would meet all over the state. They would hold consumer meetings. It gave me the chance to really start to interface with the National Alliance of the Mentally Ill, working with Cindy Keel and kind of all those folks, kind of new folks in my world. But it gave me the appreciation of the consumer's point of view as well as the family's point of view. Because when you work in Jeff City, as we did, that can get lost because you get caught up in all the day-to-day, what's going on at the Capitol, what's happening with the budget, are people getting things, reports turned in, and all of that sort of stuff. And you lose who you're doing it for and why you're doing it. And that really helped kind of ground me again. And here's the people that we're working for, and here's why we're doing it. Now, give you a little funny story about the consumer network. So, and I'm forgetting the guy's name. I think his name was Dallas, who was the president of consumer and sewing network. And so he invited me down to where he lived. And it's in the kind of the south central part of the state, but in a very rural community. And so he invited me to a fish fry one night. And when I was visiting. So I'm out there at this fish fry. It's in the middle of nowhere. It's probably about 7 or 8, and it's in the fall. And it dawns on me, and I'm saying, Whoa, what am I doing out here in the middle of nowhere at night? I don't know anybody.
Don't know a soul around
I
here.
don't know a soul around here. I don't even know my way back to town to get back to my hotel.
Oh my goodness sake.
And I'm out here eating fish and drinking beer with these guys, you know, and I'm saying, whoa.
Yeah, they probably loved having you and loved it, and but it is that realization of this is unique.
Yeah.
That's great. And really, I love you said that, Mark, because you saw also firsthand, and I wonder if this kind of, it all ties together, but the adoption of kind of peers into our workflows and into our provider system in a way that meets clients where they are more is really kind of almost a part of that treatment journey, and really
Yes.
as a great employment opportunity within our system for consumers, I think has really kind of embedded that, hasn't it, a little bit, I think. So I love that.
And you know, you find out that when you listen a lot of times, and I think that's what brought the peer support piece really to begin something to be valued. Their life experiences are far different than how we experience the mental health system. You know, to talk to someone who's actually taking medication every day and the side effects and all of those sorts of things is far different than talking to a prescriber who's prescribing the medication to them, and that how they may cycle and the medication may work or may not work, or talking to a family member about how they're so concerned about their loved one. And I remember some of the older family members really becoming more and more concerned about what was going to happen with their child, who even was an adult, but when they pass on, and how, who's going to help take care of them, and that sort of thing. Those real life things that come into play. And I think working with them, as you said, help create the impetus for peer support, but also some of the family supports that we've given through Department of Mental Health. Because not only have we hired peers, we've hired family members to help other family members navigate the system. So I think that component of our system isn't seen as much, but probably as critical as any other components.
Yeah, that's cool. I love that. Well, let's get to SWOPE then. So you get this nice little retirement deal out of the state of Missouri, which you put your years in, and Missouri has a nice little retirement, as they should. And
Yes.
then, but you're not done working, and you have more to give. And so an opportunity comes up at SWOPE. And at that time, I was in this role, as I recall, and then you transitioned over to SWOPE to take on its leadership. And I can just tell you right now, you changed dramatically. You stabilized, in my opinion, you really stabilized and gave SWOPE some really incredible kind of forward momentum in the journey toward full CCBHC status, toward kind of new programming and all kinds of things. So that's really cool. But so, yeah, tell us a little bit about what SWOPE, when you came into SWOPE, kind of what you had to do a little bit, just kind of that transition, and then where you saw things heading and how you got things moving.
Yeah, so transition. So Gloria Joseph, who had been, she was a hospital superintendent at Western Missouri. She had retired from the state and she had come to SWOPE. And so when I retired, she called me on the phone and she said, "Mark, could you really help us out some with how we're interacting and working with the state?" And I said, "Yeah, I can do that." And so I came on as a part-time consultant to really help solidify some strains, because you know sometimes there are strains between the community providers and the state or with the coalition. And I think those strains had become very obvious to the state and to SWOPE as well. And they needed a bridging. And so I became the person to try to help create that bridge. And a few years after that, so that went on a couple years or so, and Gloria retired, and then the opportunity came to moving to this position. I was in the position for interim for about a year, and then I moved into the position of being the executive vice president at Swope. And one of the things, and it's funny that you mentioned it, Brent, about stabilizing that sort of thing. There was some instability with Jackson County Mental Health Fund. And I don't think sometimes everybody was taking the moment to step back and say, okay, why are we having these issues and this instability with this particular organization when it seems like a very fine organization? And it took us all some minutes to sit back and reflect. And one of the things that I tried to do was be very conscious about attending the coalition meetings as well as the mental health fund meetings. And as you might recall, Brent, even before I became it, Gloria started having me come to the meetings. And I would come and represent Swope, even though I wasn't in the position of the executive vice president, which made for a very smooth transition with you and I working together once I became the vice president. And we had established some things, and you had helped us to start to rehabilitate some of this feeling about Swope being a vital part of the provider network and the provider system. And you helped smooth some of that with the state too. I mean, I did, but you did too. And I want to give credit where credit's due, because sometimes this behind the scene things where we're having little off meetings to talk about something really helps. Like, I will give one example is that Swope was seen as not always being willing to take on a new task, and would do it, but do so reluctantly. Well, I know the state likes you to embrace new tasks. Not everybody loves embracing new tasks.
Yeah, there's new tasks all the time, it seems like. You're
Yes,
right.
yes.
You're right. You're right.
But there's a way that you can embrace them at the agency level, like Swope, and then not feel as onerous. And I think one of the things that you helped me do and helped the state understand was Swope isn't being resistant to be resistant, but they feel like these things are being added on and may not have a full understanding of what's going on. Well, part of it is if nobody's coming to the coalition meetings, you aren't hearing the reasoning behind doing
That's
this.
right. That's
What you
right.
see is something you feel is almost like a mandate that's coming down the pike, and you had no input into it. And that was the reason why I'm saying to them, and now it carries on through Josette, these meetings are important. You have to show up. You have to be part of the conversation when the ideas are being formed in order to feel like something isn't being thrust on you. And you're being saying, well, why are you pushing this on me? And the other side saying, well, why aren't you accepting what we're asking you to do?
That's a great point. No, I definitely could tell, participating, engaging, obviously rising up through the ranks and within the executive committee all the way through board chair. You really do once you start taking those responsibilities, Mark, you do see, don't you, the behind the scenes, so the conversations, the discussions that are so important to get that feedback loop. And then, like you said, you at least feel like you may not love the end product, but at least you were part of making the sausage, and
Yes, that's right.
and you get to where it's at least a better product, and you have more buy-in that way for sure. Because, boy, there's just no doubt the need for our services and the demands for what we potentially can do are high, and that's not easy. I mean, it's a compliment. Unfortunately, it's just the way of where we are today is just a lot of, you can talk about all the causes you want with our kids and, higher anxiety and different rates of different things. And just the need for our services has never been greater, probably, or at least it's definitely not gone down. And everybody's kind of wanting us to step in and help, which is wonderful, but it is a strain on leadership and resources and everything else. And so being a part of the conversation has really never been more important. So I appreciate you setting that example.
You know, one of the things I see too Brent, is that, and this is under your leadership, and I want to throw a shout out to my buddy Dr. Parks,
Yeah, old Joe
who,
Parks.
yeah. So when I worked in central office, I actually my office was next to Joe Parks, and the leadership that you all have provided on the state level and on the national level, I think has changed the framework and the conversation about mental health services in a more profound way than most people realize. They see things like CCBHC, and those things don't come out of the air. And,
No, right. Yeah.
there's a whole lot of work that goes on behind the scenes, and you working with Senator Blunt and he working with Senator Stabenow, like you said, reaching across the aisle. And Missouri in particular, really, all of us rolling up our sleeves month after month and on calls and that sort of thing, trying to hammer what does this thing need to look like? How can we
Oh,
change the payer
yeah.
system from fee for service to something that's more reflective and probably and is has been better for the consumers and families and the communities? That's a heavy lift. And you got to have a whole bunch of people with various types of expertise in order to lift. You know, I think about the Clive system. You know, that
Yes.
didn't exist. That
No,
was created.
that's right. That was created. That's right. Now,
And
I love you. I'm going to bring it up now because I want to give you and the SWOPE leadership team. I'll never forget one of the honors of my life was doing a CCBHC tour with Senator Blunt. And I think we visited seven CCBHC sites, if I remember, over 2.5 days or something. And it was a heck of a tour of a lot of flights, a lot of meals on the go and different things. But I'll never forget in my entire life the stop at SWOPE because we stopped there and you had us all in that conference room. And Mark, you did a presentation for the senator and his senior staff. And you know, Senator Blunt was a just took over the leadership mantle of Kit Bond as it relates to the FQHC support of that. And like you said, that was a building block for Roy and Stabenow to build upon that as a model for the behavioral health side. And so, you know, him seeing, I saw it in his eyes, Mark. I'm not joking, just that this is it. This is the model. What Mark's talking about, I'm at this traditional FQHC that has been an influence in Kansas City for decades on the FQHC side, has had political support across the aisle. And I could just see him get it. And Mark, you did that presentation. And I mean, and we had you speak at other things too. But honestly, you know, like you said, it took a team to get that across the line and to see where it is today and see kind of how it's positioned today. Some of the work in my mind done right here in Missouri from people like you influenced that national policy in a way that we probably can't give enough credit to. So shout out to you and SWOPE for that. It was a memorable day there at SWOPE, and congratulations. You played a
yeah.
big part in it.
And shout out to you, Brent, because those Hill days when we would go up there before it came into being and us talking to the various legislators and that sort of thing, and you all going back more frequently than we did, but you could see over the year or two as it took to build momentum, you could see them starting to get it and
Yeah.
saying, yeah, I understand this. This makes
Yeah.
sense. And yeah, we can get there. We and when they came up with the was it 8 states, I think it
Yeah,
was,
the first
in
eight.
the initial pilot, and of course us being fortunate to be one of those 8 states, that meant they really understood it and they wanted to take a chance on
Yep.
it. And we all, I mean, we had to all put our shoulder to the wheel because we
Yeah.
wanted it to be successful.
Boy, we did, didn't we? We wanted to
Yes,
do it
we
for
did.
Roy and we wanted to make sure it worked and felt a little pressure, but I think we got it done. And now we just continue to focus on outcomes and performance and like you said, what it means for our patients it really has kind of blown things up in many ways, and most of them good. And that's been really exciting. So tell me, you're still working a little bit at Swope, because
Yeah.
I know that, but so like let's focus on your work in the community now. Like, what are you kind of, you talked a little bit about what you did there and some of the work you did there, but what are you kind of in particular proud of that Swope is doing or has done that you're feeling like, man, I'm putting a pin in this one. This is pretty cool.
Well, the CCBHC definitely kind of was the pin that I hopefully put in.
You're one of
And
the original 15.
yes. And then also that understanding of relationship building, because we now have a very good relationship with the mental health levy. We have a good relationship with the courts. We have a good relationship with the city, with the county. And all of that came from learning how to walk up and down those halls in the state capitol long, long time ago, and understanding the importance of working with people and how the legislature can work with an agency and that sort of thing. So those things I'm proud of. But now my I'm into retirement 2.0 and retirement from SWOPE, and I'm working part-time and working on a project we call SWOPE Health Village, which is one of the more comprehensive projects, I think, in most cities, taking on a major redevelopment of behavioral health programming. This has a component of high density senior housing, as well as now we've put in a community resilience piece of this, and it's all on one campus. We've been able to acquire an entire large city block with the help of the city, with some of our own funds, with the help of the state, of course. And now we're in the process of renovating that into a campus. We're going to build two 18-bed apartments where people who have substance use disorder as well as mental health concerns will have safe, decent, affordable housing, which is they've been repeating that since I started at Department of Mental Health and before I got there. We're building some safe, decent, and
Yes.
affordable housing. The same thing for the senior side of the project, safe, decent, affordable housing for seniors. Since we're an FQHC, now they become part of our service array. One of the pieces that I'm particularly proud of, it may be more unique to me, is that it's in the neighborhood that I grew up
Oh,
in. And
that's cool.
we were able to purchase the church and the rectory that were sitting there from the Catholic diocese. I walked past those places when I went to high school, and the neighborhood had deteriorated. Now we're starting to make that turnaround and
Yeah.
investment into something that at one time was a centerpiece. We're restoring it not only to the value of the church being a centerpiece of the area, but now building new things there that will become services for the community, plus something that the community can be proud of. And one of the things I've heard from several people who are employees here, and for some of the community meetings we've had out there, we've created renderings of the master plan of what the entire campus looks like. Everybody's starting to get a sense of pride again.
Yeah.
And that is so important, to have a sense of pride in your community.
Yep.
And for me, it's like kind of coming home and saying, wow,
Yeah.
I got a hand in trying to
How cool is
make the
that?
neighborhood that I grew up in go back to being as beautiful as it was when I was a kid, which was,
Man,
like you
that's
say, we
cool.
won't date ourselves, but
Yeah,
it's
let's
been a
not go
while.
there, Mark. Let's not go there. Like, yeah, back in, 2000s. Hey,
Yeah.
but for real, like think about, I love nothing more. You know this, like those CI projects have been transformative, and a shout to Governor Parson and the legislature for getting that done. And we work really hard to get those dollars. But it really is. I love going into a brand new clinic that's, really nice. You know how important that patient experience is. I love those projects, so don't get me wrong. But how cool is that Swope project? you described. I mean, that from a, what we think of mental health, the psychiatrist, the therapist, the, maybe that, but to think about what that means for people, that residential, that housing, that safety, that's going to be, there's probably no bigger topic next 3 to 5 years that we'll be talking about is kind of how we get people into least restrictive environments, out of
Absolutely.
nursing homes, out of these state hospitals, and into and out of regular hospitals where folks are boarded, and just
Yeah.
trying to figure out better ways of kind of that continuum to get people better treatment. So you're a big part of that, Mark. You should be proud of it. I cannot wait to get up there and be at that ribbon cutting. I know they named something after you to honor your work on it already. But I really look forward to visiting when some of that starts getting done. But I could talk about that one forever, and I know you could too. But let's talk one little thing real quick.
Okay.
It's not little, it's a big thing, but we don't have a lot of time. But I really valued your judgment and opinion and your leadership with us around our work around diversity and inclusion. And, I'm not going to shy away from this. It definitely has some political issues involving it now, where people have, for whatever reason, either folks have taken it maybe into some places it shouldn't have gone, and then this has been a reaction to it. But at its heart, for you and me, when we've talked about this, as it started to kind of get some political opposition, at its heart, it's about love and respect and the idea that people deserve access to good health care, and they deserve access to education, and just some of these principles are really hard. It's kind of hard to be against it when you frame it in a way that is what it was originally about. And so I kind of value your opinion. You've been a guide to me for years on this, and now with the federal stuff coming, we're probably going to have to change some of the things we do. At least how we title it, but getting to that fundamental idea of, how important it is to provide access to care, which is what we do, and to make
Yeah.
sure care is appropriate for the people that we serve. And we're not going to get away from that. That's who we are and what
Right.
we do. But, maybe we have to change a little bit how we talk about it. I don't know, or label it. But we have to stay fundamental to what we're doing out there.
Yeah, families are hurting, and individuals are hurting, and communities are hurting. And like you said, there isn't a lack of things that need our attention and that we can provide some help in. And I think if we ground ourselves in that focus and say that here is a community and here's what this community needs are, it becomes, like you said, how do you not feel the need of a community? Now, how we go about it, I have watched this ebb and flow my entire life, because I've been involved, from
You
the
have,
time I was a student
absolutely.
in high school. And really, my first remembrance of it is when Dr. King was killed in 1969. Dating myself a little bit, I know,
Hey, now
but
you did that, Mark. That
yeah,
definitely
that's
did
right.
that dated you.
Yeah.
But yeah, that
And
tragedy for sure.
From that point to this point, there have been many ebbs and flows.
Yeah.
And I see where we are now as part of that. I think there's this journey. And, Dr. King said that the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice. I absolutely believe that. I mean, that
Yeah.
is fundamental to my core belief. And so if I think that way, then I know it's saying the arc is long. This is part of that arc.
Yeah.
And that in this juncture, that certain words have become buzzwords that some folks find that are feeling like it's almost like reverse discrimination,
Right.
where other folks feel like we never solved the first part.
Yeah, we're still on those journeys. Yeah,
So we're still on
absolutely.
the journey from the first part.
Yeah.
And so I understand it from that perspective. And I think that's part of having gone on the journey
Yeah.
a long time.
Yeah.
And I
I
think
always think, Mark, and just, some of the people I know that are kind of, on a side or whatever, I always also think if they're sitting here with Mark Miller and Brent McGinney and producer Megan and we're all visiting, they have good, a lot of folks have hearts that are willing to have good conversations. They just seem to get caught up in these things. And I love how you said that about the arc and what Dr. King said about, we may have these little things that happen and that we have to kind of reset or somehow. But man, I hope my feeling, my core says there's a lot of good people out in this world and a lot of what that middle 60% or whatever we call it, Mark, that are just fundamentally good people. And I really hope we, reestablish some of that.
if we look at the core reasons why our services exist, I think that'll always ground us in the right way.
Yeah.
You know, if we're helping individuals and families, no matter where they come from, and we are trying to design those services that can best help those folks, then we're going to stay on the right track. And we're
That's
going to
well said.
20 years from now, they're going to call it something different than what we're calling it today. But it's still going to be families who have mental health
Yeah.
concerns and substance use disorder concerns and concerns of crime in the community and all of those other things. If you're addressing those things, you're going to find the common ground because folks want to live in safe communities. They want their family members to feel secure with good health care and those sorts of things. And I
Yeah.
think some of those things are universal. And
Amen.
we will find our way back there.
That's
I have
right.
got to have faith we will find our way
We
back
will find our
to
way
that common
back
ground.
there by we're going to stay focused, and I don't care what the labels are. We're going to stay focused, and we're going to do the right thing, and keep our eye on that prize, Mark. So I know we've kept you forever. I can't let you go though without a few things. One is I want our listener to know, we speak about politics, and politics it's a dirty word to a lot of folks. We've been a part of it, Mark, you and I, forever. I remember we started our little political action committee because we felt a little bit like we needed a voice. It wouldn't be a big one, but we needed to be involved more than we perhaps were before. And for the listener, I always remember Mark was one of the first in line and wrote a personal check to our PAC and really kicked us off almost with one of the first donations. And that meant a lot to me, Mark, that you gave us that confidence to kind of get that thing started. And again, we don't have a huge voice. We're not the big, huge private corporate, giving level, but it gives us a little bit to, act like we actually belong in the political process. And I always appreciated you doing that, Mark. It sticks in my head. And then lastly, you're a Kansas City guy. I've always been on the St. Louis side of sports. So, the Chiefs and Royals for you, I was Cardinals, and the Cardinals left, and the Rams left me. And so, anyway, I've struggled on the football world, but we have shared one thing, and that's been MIZ.
Yes,
And
ZOU.
Z, yeah. And I love this so much because just briefly tell our listener, again, we kept you too long, but you were alumni president for a year or two, weren't you?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah,
So
it's so cool.
kind of did the same thing, went through the ranks in the Missouri Alumni Association
I love
and
that.
became the president of the Missouri Alumni Association in 1998 and 99. And
That's
if
so
anybody
cool.
really wants to see and check me, if you go into the Reynolds Alumni Center and look on that board where all the presidents are, you'll see
But
my little plaque. It's only about that big, but you'll
you're
see
in
my
there.
little plaque up there is
I
marked
love
up.
it. Well, Mark, I'm excited about MIZ this year, and I know we share that, and we'll keep in touch. There's got to be a way we can get together at a Mizzou thing frequently. I'd love that.
We will find a way to
We will
get
find a
together
way.
again
We
there.
will find a way. Well, Mark, again, we've kept you for far too long, and it's been a real pleasure spending some time with you. Like I said, you've been a friend and a mentor and a leader and a really respected, highly, highly respected member of this movement in Missouri. And again, it's been a pleasure, and hope you have a wonderful day and get that Swope Health Village wrapped up, and we'll see you when it's done for sure.
All right, and thank you so much for the invitation to be here, part of the first year of podcasts. And I now when we look back a little bit further down the road and look back, and you're this world famous podcaster. Don't forget you had little old me to come on in the early years.
Yeah, what? Hey, Mark, when we get up to like 15 listeners, we'll know we've made it, right?
Yeah, there we go.
All right. Well, Mark, see you later, buddy. Thank
All
you.
right. Thank you guys so much.